Donalena Kitchen talks about food. Donalena Kitchen talks recipes. Donalena Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalena Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week, live at noon, at the studios of KHOI Community Radio. We get by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yes, we do. The Donalena Kitchen is sponsored in part by Practical Farmers of Iowa, a member-based, farmer-led, nonprofit organization that has been strengthening farms and communities through farmer-led investigations and information sharing since 1985. You can find out more at their website, www.practicalfarmers.org.
Thanks to them, and thanks to you, our listener, for joining us today, because your ears make this radio station go around and around. This is community radio. We get by with your help, too. So, the seasons are obviously changing. I got out my... The fuzzy sweaters and the... Where the heck did I put my mittens?
I lit the wood stove last night, I'll tell
you.
You
did? Mm. Oh, at least that feels so good when that happens.
Oh yeah, I just camped right next to it.
Oh, good for you.
Plus, I have a new kitten, and I was worried that she might not know how to react to a hot, large surface. So
she will learn very quickly. Oh, yeah. You have a very small kitten. I have a cat that produces a lot of CTUs, the cat thermal units. Mm-hmm. I can just kind of wrap that. I do like my cat Spot. He just is really
Mine will grow
cat.
Into one.
Yeah,
of those,
I'm sure she
hopefully.
Will. I'm sure
yes.
She will. So it's cat weather. It's sweater weather, mitten weather, and this time of year we always go through this confusing time. No, I'm not talking about the elections, although that's confusing. Confusing time when they tell us that we're moving from daylight saving time to our standard time again, and we look at one another and we say, forward, back.
Having jet lag with no travel.
Very well put. It kind of puts me off for a day, and I'm never quite sure what day it happens on.
I feel a bit muddled.
Muddled is right. So here's a few thoughts about time. I looked this up. Daylight saving time. It is a construction. It is a mind game that we play with ourselves, that somehow we can keep the world from turning. And it was first proposed, daylight saving time, in 1895 by a scientist from, believe it or not, New Zealand. He was a thinker, and he was a collector of insects, and he wanted to be out collecting insects more, and he thought, if I could just have another. So he kind of started the ball rolling, proposing it to people. But that was clear back in 1895.
Oh, they must have thought he was a lunatic at the time,
yes.
Right?
However, people, maybe this is a good idea.
Yeah, we can get more work out of
more
human
work
beings.
Out of people.
That's
they
right.
First used in 1908 in the city of Thunder Bay, Canada. And you can understand, they wanted to grab onto their sunlight up there. We'll try it out up here.
Yeah.
Okay. In 1916, daylight saving time, they played around with it in Germany and Austria. Again, we can take care of this. We'll make this. It was played around with during the two world wars here in the United States, kind of, you know, for the good of the troops. Everybody was willing to give and
take. Work an extra hour.
Yeah. However, it was a little confusing. There weren't really very many rules between things. And FDR in 1942 kind of said, well, let's give this a try. But it wasn't until 1966 that the USA Uniform Time Act
I remembered that happened within my lifetime.
It is. We were there.
That's the year I graduated from high school.
Was it confusing then? It's confusing now.
Oh, listen, the year you graduate from high school is confusing no matter what time. You know?
So daylight saving time, here we are. I think we're kind of over the hump. We're back out of it now. We're back into standard time. Hawaii and Arizona ignore daylight saving time.
They still do?
They still do.
Well, I say good for them.
Good for them. Hawaii, who cares? It's always lovely. The sun shines. Arizona, too. Plenty of sunshine. Get this, though. Arizona within it has a quite a big chunk of its land is taken over by the Navajo Nation, and they do follow daylight saving. So here we are. Anyway, we are we are on standard time now, and that is also a construct. What is time?
Time zones. Oh,
yeah, time zones. Time
oh,
zones.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
Let's air our contrarian opinions about all things in the civilization.
There we go. The railroads were big for this one, and they started
Helps with their timetables.
Yeah. And the ships at sea. And
oh,
so 1883, yes. They decided to draw lines on the map, and here we are. Anyway, a few thoughts about time.
Oh, I want to note to our radio audience, let's get a visual on Lana today, okay? Her glasses, which are black and green, match her shirt. This is a very Oprah Winfrey look. Have you noticed? Oprah's always wearing different colored glasses that are cued into her wardrobe.
Well, let's talk.
She is
let's
so
talk.
Stylin'. Now Lana is our stylin'.
Maven.
Maven. There you go. That's right. Maven. Perfect word. Oh, boy. Oh,
and
boy.
And perfect for radio. Well, another, I did something fun this weekend. I went to the ISU theater production of the opera Orpheus in the Underworld.
Oh, I heard it was fabulous.
It was
absolutely.
It was irreverent and wonderful, satirical. Scathing is the word, I think. It was written by...
Scathing. Oh, my God.
Scathing. By
Offenbach, right?
Offenbach. Now,
so we're talking like 1850, 1860?
This was written 1858. He was banned for a long time by the French.
Oh, a bad boy of all times.
All this satire. You can't do that. People were...
So was it in French? Is it Offenbach in French?
It wasn't sung in French. But I'm sure it was.
Was it sung in English?
Yes, yes.
Oh.
But there's so much going on in an opera. You can't keep track of it. There's gods, there's goddesses, there's Mount Olympus, there's Hades, there's people. And the best character of all was public opinion, who stopped in every now and then to critique the antics.
Oh, cute.
That's part of the thing.
Dancing.
It's part of the thing.
And singing.
Costumes,
I bet.
Costumes
were
wonderful. And so this opera, just to kind of put this in your brain, is where the music and the tune from the Can-Can was written. Offenbach wrote that.
That's right.
That is the grand finale. The Can-Can was born out of Offenbach's opera.
And it was a real poke in the eye at the time,
wasn't
it?
It was. This was kind of the waning days of the
Napoleonic.
Oh, boy. And people were a little full of themselves. Napoleon was a little full of himself. And Offenbach kind of rips everybody a good one. He makes satire out of everybody, including the god Jupiter, who he brings down to size, and it's just fun. Besides ending with the Can-Can, you understand the first act ends with everybody is in Olympus and they're going to go save somebody who's been thrown down into Hades. So everyone has a rousing chorus of "Let's all go to hell." really, truly, that is in the movie. And it's just as catchy as the Can-Can. It's funny.
Boy, it's kind of apropos these days.
It is.
Oh, what a choice. That was the ISU. Who put that on?
The ISU Theater Department.
Oh, the Theater Department.
We are so lucky to have
all these cultural amenities in town.
They don't always do opera every year, but it was Orpheus and the Underworld. And my goodness, all those people that can open their mouths and sing up a storm. It was kind of a nice opening to the holidays and a nice way to cleanse the brain's palate for the election season. Vote today, folks. Vote.
Yes, vote. Whatever you're thinking, just go and vote it. We need to. It's like taking the census of our moral fibers here. Everybody gets to have their opinion today, and boy, you better use it while you got a chance.
Yes. If they ask your opinion, give it.
That's right.
So here we are, the holidays, believe it or not. The holidays are on the horizon.
Oh, yes.
After we get
through this election, we can, we've done Halloween. Now comes Thanksgiving, and then, boy, the big one is on.
So gatherings and meals, and you found an interesting news item, Donna.
Oh, golly. So the New York Times has this year, at least, the Thanksgiving Menu Planner, and it's kind of funny, but it's also very useful. So it has this build a feast for everyone at your table, and it has this little graphic where you go on and it asks you, this is to help you choose what menu options you want. It's quite elaborate. So
it
says
kind of,
how many people are coming. So you can you select your choices on a scale going from an intimate table 2 to 4 to a stadium seating 18 plus, right? The next question is, how experienced a cook are you? From a first timer to a seasoned veteran. And you can choose in between settings. So you set all of these things. I'll redo the rest of your questions. But then it brings up the recipes. So how omnivorous are your guests? No meat, no dairy. Hello. To lots of meat and lots of dairy. And then what kind of meal do you envision? Keep it traditional to change it up. When will you begin cooking? Now, I think this is well thought out. When will you begin cooking? Way ahead to last minute. So you choose your settings, and then they give you 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 recipes to choose from. And some of them, I just did a random setting kind of in the middle, and it came up with things like apple cranberry slab pie, honey glazed upside down pear cake, hashed Brussels sprouts with lemon. Sounds good. Lobster mac and cheese. That must be from the Change It Up menu. Red wine cranberry sauce with honey. Not too over the top. Oh, Madeira gravy. Now, I did this one last year. You just put some Madeira into your turkey gravy. It was good. It is a very good idea. Their turkey was, now I think I set this for stadium seating, rosemary and citrus turkey for a crowd.
Rosemary? That's good. Yeah. Get away from the sage for a little bit
now,
here.
Ah, it doesn't say pumpkin pie here, but here's one that I had to look at. It's called Salty Pluff, P-L-U-F-F mud pie. It's essentially a chocolate pie, but I'm going pluff. First we go, is that a typo? And I go, no, this is the New York Times, right? It can't be a typo. So then in the recipe, it says, in her kitchen, the chocolate chess pie her grandmother always made, filled with white sugar, evaporated milk, and cocoa powder that has been adapted to local ingredients. The pie gets its name from pluff mud, the sticky sulfurous sediment that lines the bottom of the South Carolina tidal marshes. Some say it is the true source of low country flavor. Now, I don't know if it, you don't put that in the pie. It just looks like that, but it's a bang up good recipe. Now, so you can just Google to find this, the New York Times. I think if you just Google New York Times Thanksgiving Menu Planner, it should pull it up. Now, let's see. Evan told me if you don't have a subscription to New York Times, I think at least you get 2 or 3 free articles per month, or here's an option.
Okay, so I mean, if you surf like Ames Tribune, it'll do the same thing where it'll put up a soft paywall if you read so many articles a month. So what you end up doing, if you want to get around that, is you use Chrome as your web browser.
Chrome.
Right-click on it and choose an incognito window. So basically incognito windows basically don't keep track of your browsing history on the local level. Plus,
that means
cookies
or something?
That's correct. It means no cookies, so it doesn't keep track of that little
pieces of
data. So I mean, like, it's not going to keep track of what IP address you're contacting the website from, necessarily. And, it allows you to kind of get around that and then read a little bit more than the powers that be would like you to.
Okay. And if that's over your head, just remember you do get a few free articles.
Mm-hmm.
So have had it. It's actually kind of I thought it was a good idea, and it kind of helps you put a frame around, oh, what are we going to cook now? And you got to structure the menu, and, you know, I like to think about it in advance. Not that I do a lot of advanced preparation, but once I know what I want to do, it lessens the anxiety, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, here's the map. I know where I'm going. So that is the New York Times Thanksgiving Menu Planner.
Thank you, Don. And the new word for today is pluff.
Pluff,
which refers to a chocolate pluff pie, but it refers to the mud in
South Carolina.
In South Carolina. There
yes.
you go. Okay. New word. New word. Another thing going on this time of year, I'm kind of putting, well, I said the garden's all up and on, up and out, but I have lots of things that I harvested at the last minute, and I had lots of onions this year that you get things out of the garden, and there are some that are just not up to snuff. They're not going to make it.
They can't be stored.
No, they got a bruise on. They're starting to sprout. They're not so good. So I had a bunch of onions that needed to be dealt with, and I got out my onion jam recipe from, and this is on the Donalana Kitchen website.
Oh, our favorite book.
Yes.
There we go.
The website, and it's from the River Cottage Handbook, Preserves by Pam Corbin. And I'll just, onion marmalade. She calls it an onion marmalade, but I call it onion jam. It really is. It's jam made, and you can use it. I love it.
Was yours pink this year?
I was pink. I used a lot of red onions.
Oh,
a lot of
goody,
red
goody,
onions.
Goody.
It's the perfect thing. Now, thinking ahead to the holidays, it's the perfect thing to put on your leftover turkey and or whatever you have, ham sandwiches. It is so good.
Yes,
so,
it is, because it's just chilled and you spread it on with the mayonnaise if you want to.
It's good. It's good. So here is what Pam Corbin says about onion jam. Onions are one of the most versatile ingredients in the culinary world, but not often given the chance to be the star of their own show. A recipe like this puts that right. Long, slow cooking turns a pan full of red, white, or yellow onions into a fantastic, rich sauce / jam.
Yeah, and you can use any onions.
Use that stuff that's left over. I've even put in some sad leeks, but I didn't have any leeks left over this year. And, of course, because this is an English cookbook, she suggests that it is brilliant served with bangers and mash. So, or try it with cheese on toast, with cold meat sandwiches, or...
Be good on a cheese board. Absolutely.
Or stir, and I've done this quite often, stir a spoonful into a creamy pumpkin soup.
Oh, yeah, just use it as a seasoning.
Yep.
So nice.
Go
nice.
To the KHOYFM.org, go to the Donalana Kitchen page and find the recipe there. That's onion jam.
Now, are you ever tempted to drop any herbs into it? Or pepper, or
it's got salt and pepper in it. Actually, quite a lot of pepper.
Yeah,
but I mean the onions are onions. I haven't done anything else.
Oh, I
have
this marjoram thing. I can never resist putting some dry marjoram in everything.
Go right ahead, Donna.
That's
perfectly fine. Oh, good, good. So I am thinking ahead. This is my what to do with Thanksgiving leftovers. I have a couple jars of onion jam ready to go. You have a little report on cheese, Donna. Oh, everyone loves cheese.
Oh, I did a little trip to Des Moines recently, and I went in to do something else, and then I always try to stop by the cheese shop, which is on 42nd Street.
Oh, that is a nice
place. Yes, they have always something interesting, and, they have a kitchen there for I don't know how long, maybe 8 years or something, and they turn out a nice little thing of food. You know, they do this super macaroni and cheese and charcuterie and stuff like that. And so I get there, and there's a sign that says, closed for private event. If you really, really need some hearty cheese food, go to our restaurant. I go, restaurant? The restaurant is called The Cheese Board, and it's on Ingersoll. So I just went over there and found it, and it's really delightful.
So it's the same folks that run the
same folks,
cheese
but they made an actual, store. Super duper restaurant with a great cocktail list, big bar. The bar is really cute. Behind it, there are all these taps, like a line of, I don't know, must be 20 taps, and it doesn't say what's on it. So I said to the bartender, how do you know what's in which tap? He said, well, they're numbered. And then I went, but that means you have to know what each number means, right? He's quite a clever guy. He makes some very interesting cocktails, too. So we went for dinner, some friends of mine, Anna and Lou. And, of course, now the cheese board guys have a very special connection to herb at La Quercia, which means they do serve a lot of La Quercia and have done for a while. But they also had a very special pig. That
pig.
That Herb and Kathy Eckhouse, the owners of La Quercia. It's a traditional Italian breed, and somehow they got some breeding stock. They have somebody in Iowa growing it out. And, of course, Herb and Kathy want the, you know, the quarters that they can dry and make the prosciutto out of. So somehow the cheese shop gets the rest of the bits.
Oh, those poor folks.
Yeah. So I had to go back and try the ribs that they made out of it.
Oh, my goodness.
And they have lots of things. Like, they do cheesy dishes, of course. There was what's the thing where you dip the cheese? A fondue. There's a group fondue that you can have. Actually, I didn't try it, but I saw it served a lovely platter of just homemade tomato soup and a grilled cheese sandwich that looked magnificent.
Yes, yes.
And then they may have all their house-made charcuterie, which was pretty good. I had a chicken and liver, not heavily livered, but very light pâté.
A chicken liver pâté?
Yes.
Oh.
But very chickeny, and
not just
the chicken livers. It was really good. And then they, you know, they do their house pâté, which is the normal, you know, pork things. All very delicious. It's a good outing worth doing. And they have big communal tables, a wonderful wine and beer list, and of course, as I said, the cocktails. And it was very busy.
So,
yeah,
a restaurant review from our intrepid restaurant goer.
Yes. When I get a good one, I will be back. So it's called The Cheese Board, and it is on Ingersoll in Des Moines.
Ha!
It was a treat. It's always a treat to go to a restaurant where they're making something either that I can't make because I'm not clever enough, or I can't be bothered to make. So, you know, charcuterie is a very, very special skill, and it is occasionally I make something, but it's not something I do every day.
Tell us what charcuterie is.
Okay.
It's a wonderful
word. It's prepared
meats,
mostly.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like terrines and pâtés, you know, where you chop a lot of meat up and you cook it in a little loaf pan. And then there's this thing with pâté where you press it. Like, it's almost like taking a meatloaf and putting a brick on top of it with a bunch of weights on it to smash it down. It's a little more complicated than that. But then it comes out loaf-like, but not crumbly like a meatloaf.
It's more sausagey,
kind of.
Except, you know, not in rounds.
Yeah, that actually is. But yeah, you imagine slicing it and you usually eat it cold or at room temperature, and it can be pork or all kinds of things. So they have pork. It's traditionally pork, but they have the chicken liver is a common pâté actually, and then terrine is actually the same loaf kind of shape, but you can do almost anything you want in a terrine, like even a vegetable terrine. And the terrine is often kind of glommed together by using gelatin. But it comes out as a loaf. So it makes a very neat little slice.
With cheese.
With beer.
You can
have it on a cheese board.
I think this,
and
this
pickles
is good.
And you know, that, like, cornichons and mustards and things like that. And this time of year, that heavy, delicious food, I can see why it appeals to Iowans.
There you go.
They're doing very well. Nice job. I will go back again.
Good. You are listening to KHOI. This is the Donalana Kitchen, and this is Tasty Radio, the heart of Iowa. Thank you. Welcome back. We are around our kitchen table here talking about things that are seasonal, of course, and thinking ahead to the holidays, thinking of different things to make. So we're in Iowa. Let's think about corn for your holiday dinner, and let's think a little bit about polenta.
Oh, yes. So you think it's Italian. I mean, that's where the word comes from. But it's really, I think maybe corn pone was the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Mush. You know, it's just corn mush.
Corn mush. Mm-hmm. Right. It's just ground corn, and you cook it up with water, milk, chicken stock, whatever have you. Season it how you like.
Very good. So it's like... It's like making a hot cereal, sort of.
Yeah, except that usually it's savory. You could make it sweet and have it for breakfast. I mean...
Oh, really?
Yeah, why not?
Never have.
Pour in a little of that Earl's buckwheat honey and some nice warm milk over. I mean, we have good corn here. Not the kind that you mostly see in the fields. It's for human consumption corn.
That's true.
Field corn.
That's true. And you talked a little bit earlier about... Cheese is good, and cheese in the polenta.
Should I do the recipe?
Do the recipe.
Oh, okay, so you take your cornmeal. Now, I of course have a very special cornmeal. So Early Morning Harvest, which is in Panora, Iowa, grows their corn and they mill it, and you can get corn flour, which is much more finely ground, like if you want to make cornbread with it, or he has two different grinds. One he calls a polenta, and the other one, you know, I'm not sure how he labels, but I like the really coarsely ground. I like my polenta, a little granulated. Now, most of the polentas that you buy in the stores, especially the Italian ones, are much more finely ground, and that's nice too. But I like this really chunky stuff, and Earl, for a couple of years, has been growing this corn that is just this gorgeous golden yellow. So it's quite pretty, but whatever polenta you're using, it's usually about 3 cups of liquid to 1 cup of polenta. Now, the smaller ground may take a little less water, and it certainly will take less time to cook. The smaller the grind, the more quickly it will cook. So I just, you know, now, traditionally, you are starting with the warm liquid, which could be... usually water, but it could be chicken stock, which is really yummy, or milk, or milk and cream. And traditionally, you start with the liquid hot and stir the cornmeal in. However, especially if you're using a fine grind, you can get lumps that way. So I find it's really efficient. I just start it with the cold liquid, pour the cornmeal in, and let it all work together. And then you don't have any chances of... you know, you just whisk it in a little bit, and that way you don't have any chances of lumps. But, you know, you add a little salt, basically salt and pepper. You do want a tiny bit of oil in there so it doesn't scorch too much on the bottom once it gets thickened up. And you can do this in a slow cooker, too, which is a good way not to burn it. So you can put butter or olive oil or cheese. Polenta is often made with cheese, or just the cheese goes in at the very end. Now, I add to my Earl's polenta, of course, my marjoram.
Of course.
Salt, pepper, marjoram, and garlic is my go-to. Mm-hmm. But you can go much, much more deeply than that. Mm-hmm. But polenta is, I would say, I mean, you obviously can make a polenta to add to your turkey stuffing.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And it's easier
yes.
than, it's a little wetter than, of course, if you're making cornbread stuffing, mm-hmm. but can be done. Or I find polenta is really good the day after when you've got those leftovers and you want something hot, like to pour the leftover turkey on or the turkey gravy or something
with
that.
With the Madeira in it, yes.
Yes, okay. Yes, exactly. Exactly. Oh, you got my drift there. But we do have wonderful polenta in Iowa from Early Morning Harvest. Mm-hmm. And we have a special interview with
yes.
the farmer
yes.
and the miller.
Yes. And there really was a time when I didn't know what polenta was, but Donna set
Corn
me straight.
Cornmeal mush. There Corn you go. Meal now mush. You know what
so
that is.
I dived back into the Donalana Kitchen Show way back in 2014. There was the PFI, Practical Farmers of Iowa, field day at Early Morning Harvest.
In Panora.
And we went there. Donna actually cooked some polenta.
I took a big turkey roaster and made a huge batch, and everybody ate it.
Yeah, it was
gusto.
Good. And we talked to Earl Hafter while we were there. If you can cook oatmeal, you can cook polenta.
Exactly.
We talked to Earl Hafner.
This is Earl Hafner. He and his son Jeff grow these wonderful corn products that are sold through the brand name of Early Morning Harvest. Anyway, we're eating corn polenta where I put a slightly smoky cheese and some garlic and marjoram and salt and pepper and butter. That simple. So, Earl, what I want to know is, why is your corn so sweet? Is it a varietal thing?
Part of it is when we search for a variety of corn for our meal, we like it to be flinty, but yet enough starch, you know. Starch gives you your flavor and everything, but the flint gives you your texture. So I usually just go to the different grain bins that I have corn in, and I find the variety that I like the best after it goes through the mill.
You use the term flinty. How does one what does a flinty corn look like?
Popcorn. Popcorn is very flinty. So the pericarp, the outside edge of the corn, if it's flinty, then you're going to get a better grind.
Now, these are quite small, really.
Well,
is this a especially edible variety? Certainly
not
the kind you want to feed to cats.
Just when I go through the cleaner, what I call the scalping screen takes out all the cobs or anything, but it also takes out the great big kernels.
Oh.
You know, so then it goes through the next screen, takes out any of the cracks and splits and bugs or whatever's in the corn. And so you're going to get a average size kernel.
So this is not a particular variety that you planted for flavor?
I could go look it up and find out. It's a Blue River hybrid variety. But every year is different, you know.
Because of the weather, basically?
Because of the environment. So whether you're growing corn, wheat, oats, the protein level and the type of protein in there is different based on the weather and the environment.
Environment meaning?
Mother Nature.
Temperatures.
Temperature, moisture, soil fertility.
Yeah, but your fertility is probably fairly consistent because you're rotating and it's all... Oh, you have different fields that are more fertile? Is that the...
Well, we have different soil types.
Ah, okay.
You know, so within a field, you can have four different soil types. You can have a real sandy, or you can have the black gumbo type. So
that's why you're actually sorting post-harvest for sweetness?
I don't taste it for sweetness. I go by the quality of the grind.
So you're running it through the mill, and you're, like, visually inspecting it, feeling it.
Yeah.
Because your corn has a really, really delicious... I mean, part of it is because it's so fresh by the time we get it, because it's locally processed.
If I can diverge a little bit, if the neighbor's cows get out 2 miles away, I've had them walk 2 miles to my organic corn.
Smart cows there.
Literally... if you look at the wildlife, they will hit the organic corn much harder.
Well, I've heard, and I thought it was maybe old wives' tales, that wildlife will eat the normal corn as opposed to the GMO corn.
Well, when deer attack a cornfield, the first thing they eat in the spring is the new shoot coming up, the ear shoot. So that is the tender cob and the silk and everything. And so they don't really taste the grain then. So that's when they do most of the damage.
Oh, but it's in the plant.
Right.
Like for GMO, it's in every cell of the plant, those BT little guys.
But when the grain gets mature, they will attack a cornfield, an organic cornfield. I've had turkeys move in. And
come on over, folks. Here's the organic corn, right?
You go into a field and the ears are hanging down in the fall like they are. A turkey will start at the bottom and he'll just shuck it all the way to the top. And you think you got a very nice crop out there, and I've had them take half of a crop between the turkey and the deer if you're close
wow,
to the timber.
Girl.
But open pollinated is worse. They will take 90% of the crop.
Because it's so good?
Well, open pollinated has a better flavor and all that, mm-hmm. you know. So Mother Nature has a way of saying, eat this, you know.
Only us humans are dumb enough to not know.
Well, the biggest thing in our diets, and if you watch the livestock or the wildlife, is they have variety.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the biggest thing. If they eat something that's not quite as nutritious, you know, they make up for it over here. You know, so they eat the nettles, the all the oddball weeds that we mm-hmm. call weeds. They mm-hmm. eat because of the higher nutrient value in them.
Well, this is pretty good corn.
It is.
Here in the land of plenty of corn, this is the best. Step right up, folks, and buy your early morning harvest corn polenta.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you, Earl.
You're welcome. Appreciate you coming to this field
oh,
day.
My pleasure.
Ooh, we've been talking about polenta. It sounds real, real good. Polenta is an Iowa product. It's Iowa product, folks. Think of that for your Thanksgiving table. Polenta is ground corn cooked and really wonderful. What's the difference between polenta and grits, Donna?
Well, corn, as Earl was saying, has a flinty, what's it called?
The outside.
Did he say pericardium? That's like a heart or something.
I know, the outside bits.
It has a skin kind of on the outside that when you're making polenta, you just chop that up or grind it. For grits, it has been soaked off usually in a lye mix. There's a word, I think it's called nihil mixtilization or something. It's a Spanish word.
Good
Mexican
try.
Because most of the southern U.S. and down into Mexico, they do that. It does up the protein availability in the corn. So grits, basically, that outer coating has been soaked off, then the grits are dried, and then they're ground. So it is slightly different.
Ah, but still, from corn. I have something to share with you here. A poem by Roy Blunt Jr. called A Song to Grits. When my mind's unsettled, when I don't feel spruce, when my nerves get frazzled, when my flesh gets loose, what knits me back together's grits. Grits with gravy, grits with cheese, grits with bacon, grits with peas, grits with a minimum of 2 over-easy eggs mixed in 'em. Grits, grits, it's grits I sing. Grits fits in with anything. Rich and poor, black and white, Lutheran and Campbellite, Southern Jews, Jesuits, all acknowledge buttered grits. True grits, more grits, fish, grits, and collards. Life is good where grits are swallowed. Grits sits right. That was a song to grits by Roy Blunt Jr.
And all of his suggestions for grits can equally apply to polenta.
Yes, enjoy
for us
that.
Midwesterners.
Enjoy that. That was good. This is KHOI 89.1 FM. This is Community Radio, and you are listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Thank you. Welcome back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. That was some music from a band that I really like named Bohola, B-O-H-O-L-A. Jimmy Keane, Sean Cleland, and Pat Broders. Jimmy Keane is, I hope he's still with us, because I remember seeing him quite a few many years ago, a great guy with a very big accordion, and he can, like, keep playing all night. He just kind of closes his eyes, and it just goes on and on. He was one of those amazing, amazing. I think the band is originally from Chicago, but they're very Irish in nature. We'll have a little bit more of their music later. That was from a CD called Bohola. And well, like I said, we'll have some more music from them later. Donna, you have another news item you would like to share, I believe.
Yeah, so I got another email from Dr. Chuck Benbrook, who's one of my favorite scientists. He's currently under the auspices of the Johns Hopkins, I think it's called Center for the Livable Future or something like that. And he's kind of tracking some of the agrochemical stuff that's largely going on in Iowa, but so that he publishes a newsletter called Hygieia Analytics. So the headline on this article that Chuck sent me, and this happened, I think, last week, the headline is, EPA is once again complicit in driving farmers in the wrong direction on weed management. So this is obviously Chuck's bias, and I happen to personally agree with him, because the issue is, so the EPA had to decide whether to renew the options on the recently stacked technologies that include in the herbicide mix dicamba, so we've had a lot of issues, because the problem with dicamba is an old herbicide, but it's it affects a lot of things. So, for example, this year, if you guys noticed in Iowa, there was a very large shortage of the Missouri peaches that we so look forward to. So what happened is somebody in Missouri who was spraying either their cotton, their corn, or their soybeans using the herbicide-resistant seed for those, you know, they're just going ahead on their, as we call it, the pesticide treadmill, because, of course, the usual ones that use mostly just glyphosate as an herbicide, we're getting a lot of glyphosate resistance, which means you can spray and spray and spray, and those weeds, darn it, they just keep coming because they have learned to outwit that. They have evolved, as it were. It's called weed tolerance or resistance. So then, of course, the major chemical companies have developed this newer herbicide package that contains dicamba. So the problem with dicamba is, as we have known for a long, long time, it drifts very easily. But the major agrochemical companies, oh, no, we formulated it so that it doesn't drift as much. Well, of course, they sprayed it for a few years. It drifts.
Yeah, notice the lack of good Missouri peaches.
Right,
big
it
chunks.
Drifted onto a very large peach orchard, and they lost a lot of their trees. Now, you know, if you spray and the drift goes on to your neighbor's non-treated either cotton or around here corn and soybeans, and you lose that crop, it's a loss of only, you know, as Chuck says in his article, $35 to $100 per acre or something like that, is the loss to the farmer. But now if you're spraying like grapevines, it drips onto the grapevines, or it drifts onto the peach orchard, or one of the major industries to come out against this was a part of the tomato industry, because if it drifts onto those fields, you lose your vegetable crop. What's worse is when you lose your tree and vine crops, because first of all, you have the cost of ripping out the old dead trees, then you have to plant the new ones, and then it takes multiple years before they bear fruit again. It's a very, very sad story. So what Chuck Benbrook is saying from this headline is, the EPA, you know, they had to renew the licenses for the companies to produce this, and they had an opportunity. They did make some more small tweaks in the label of how you have to, you know, spray it and some limitations. However, they could have even put a 1-year limit on it, but now it's another 2 years. And the thing that happens, if you get a little drift spray, your trees may make it okay. But if you get the next year the same thing, they get weakened and weakened and weakened, and then eventually they die of some other pest. And then it's also very hard to prove why they died, you know. So you can't really claim, you know, any legal recompense because, you know, they say, oh, well, that tree died because of some, you know, something happened to it. Mm-hmm, but not – they can't identify because the herbicide that was sprayed just weakens the immune system of the tree or the – so there's a quote here from Dr. Robert Hartzler, Iowa State Extension. The quote is, unfortunately – I don't think these new restrictions, because they did put a few new restrictions, will have a significant impact on the problem we've seen in the past 2 years. So the EPA lost an opportunity to sort of nip this problem. So one thing Chuck does say is the only virtue in this EPA decision is that it will shorten the time elapsed before we face the day of weed system management reckoning on corn and farmers that are reliable on this herbicide resistant. Because the more you spray, the more the weeds will become tolerant. So it will come more quickly. But one of the problems he foresees is there will be a lot of litigation over this because there will be more and more agricultural as well as even just landscaping loss from the, you know, this very hard to control volatile toxic chemical that will end up in the wrong place. And what's already happening is the courts are really getting jammed up in litigation over this because you can sue apparently the person that applied it or the farmer that used it, but you also eventually can sue the manufacturer.
Well, you should be able, I think, yeah.
Right. But, you know, this puts a lot of burden on our court system, which should be dealing with other things because it's a contentious issue. It's highly damaging to some parties while it seems beneficial to others. And what are you doing to your neighbors, possibly? This is a difficult position to be in.
Well, I happen to like peaches, and I think we need someone like the Lorax speaking for peach trees. Yeah, the Lorax. We do. Yes, we need corn. We need soybeans, but
there are other options. There was another quote somewhere. It says something about, like, we do know how to raise corn and soybeans and cotton without dicamba. But we don't know how to raise fruits and vegetables with dicamba. It's very clear that dicamba is going to affect these other crops. There's no doubt about it. Why not try technologies that don't go in this direction?
So be careful out there.
Yes, I'm afraid there were a lot of moneyed interests involved in this EPA decision.
There it is.
Dare I say it.
See, the food systems are not... are not simple, but they are complicated, and we as consumers have things to say, too. I'd like to mention that we're speaking of planning ahead, looking ahead to the holidays. It isn't too early to think about your turkey or whatever sort of other protein source you might be thinking for the holiday table. And if you're thinking of getting an organic turkey, there are...
Or an heritage turkey.
Or, hey, think ahead because there are nice people out there that have been growing heritage turkeys, chemical-free turkeys.
Yeah, and they're
organic
usually
turkeys.
Kind of smaller, more mm-hmm. local or at least regional mm-hmm. farmers. And it's always nice to support these people.
Right. You can order a organic turkey through your local food co-op look online. There's a lot of local growers. That growing up a turkey is no small thing.
It takes a while. Now, and the beauty of, I have to say, having done this for a number of years, the heritage turkeys have smaller breasts and more and darker meat, but usually a little more tasty than the butterball The poor butterball turkeys that you buy that are so huge-breasted, they kind of fall over almost before they can get them into processing. And
So think
there's
about
options.
That. After all, this is a meal to celebrate. Let's celebrate local food, and let's celebrate healthy food. But we have some upcomings to consider, and considering the roller coaster ride that our politics and the election cycle
will be resolved today or shortly.
Well, it won't be resolved. It will be bumped one way or the other. I mean, we still have to deal with these guys one way or the other.
But anyway,
so get out and vote.
All those politicians, we don't know what stripe we're going to get today.
Yeah, we don't know what. But anyway, do go vote. There is a women's gathering, a kind of gathering to gather our wits, I believe, after all of the to-do, especially over the Supreme Court justice hearings, the Kavanaugh hearings. There's been
some healing that women can do together for various forms of abuse that are common in our culture.
So this is a healing gathering that will be happening in Ames,
conducted by local therapists. It's quite it's not just we're going to get together and have a complaining fest or anything. It's going to be structured with local therapists who are doing this, you know, pro bono for the good of the community. Led by a psychologist, small group discussions will have trained facilitators. Mm-hmm. So it's Saturday, November 10th, 10 a.m. to noon at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Ames, 1015 North Highland. All are welcome.
Very good.
Women, I would suppose. The event is open only to women and non-binary identifying people.
We can do that.
Registration is required.
Can do that. Let's get together and do that. Saturday, November 10th. And also, as we head into the holidays, stay tuned to the Donalana Kitchen. We'll have more holiday recipe gifts and ideas.
We're moving into the season.
It's fun. Donna always likes to bake up stuff, and I do too. And we'll have some fun in the coming weeks. And also, coming up, the KHOI Fun Drive starts November 7th.
Yep, so next week we'll be talking about that.
Support this fine station. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. We gather here every Tuesday at noon, repeated Tuesday evening at 7 p.m., or anytime, go to khoyfm.org. It's online. You can
almost like a podcast.
You can stream, you can download, you can visit our archives, you can attach us to your device and share us with other people. You can also find the magic donate button there, because this is community radio. You can also volunteer at this station. This radio station is a local treasure. Let's make good use of us. Let's talk to each other. Let's listen to each other. Our democracy will be better for it. Vote today, folks. Vote. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintos.
Fine engineering by Evan Taylor. Eat good food and enjoy life.